That was beautiful, Brock. Thank you. I wanted to say this first. Last week when Mrs. Stoat was here, and she talked about the songs that she would sing here in church, and she had that hymnal or the choir book with her, she let me borrow that. So I made a copy of the song Whispering Hope that she said was her favorite song to sing, and I was going to talk to you, Brock, about maybe, I don't know, let's sing it here in Newville. Don't you think it needs to be sung here in Newville? I wish there weren't so many flats in it, but I'm going to take a try. I'm going to take a stab at it, but I've got a copy of it for you. But that was just lovely when she talked about that. I just had this idea of Newville, just a beautiful, rich, deep idea of Newville. And the family she mentioned and her family and her sitting here, it was like a surreal thing for me. It was just really, really beautiful. So we'll work on Whispering Hope. The words are beautiful. I wrote them in my journal. The words are beautiful. The topic for today has to do with naming. When we say God, when we say Lord, I've come to realize that it's a sort of a one-word doxology. Just saying his name, just saying the Lord's name. And so I've kind of come to understand that that's such a beautiful thing to hear our name spoken. And I've tried in my counseling and even as an instructor to say my students' names. I have a lot of them, so I try really hard to remember their names. That's why I have them have a little tag on their desk in front of them the whole semester. Because there's just too many of them and I don't want to miss and get it wrong. But to hear our names spoken is pretty special. So I try to say my clients' names often. Just to say their name. It's good to hear your name spoken. It's a one-word doxology. And so when we were talking, I knew that that was the topic of Tim's message. And I have some scripture verses to read for you. But first, Tim asked me to tell you a story about my own experience with a one-word doxology. And this is a fun story to tell. It happened a couple of years after Tim and I were married, and we were still living here. We had, maybe we had gone to Chicago, because we went right away, didn't we? We just kind of zoomed off. All right, we were here for Christmas, and I was over visiting with my parents, and I was going to be taking a salad or something over to Tim's house so that we could have a Christmas celebration over there. So I was by myself, probably Christmas Eve. It was sleeting, and it was icy, and it was dark, and I was on my way over to Tim's house with this, I don't know, macaroni salad in the back of my car. And I must have thought for some reason that I needed something or forgot something because I had to turn around. And I had the bright, inexplicable idea that I could turn around in the turnip field right beside me on the road. So I pulled into the turnip field and realized I needed a little more traction. So I kept on going. And then I was trying to turn around and realize that I was woefully stuck. Really, really stuck. So what do you do when you're stuck? You go forward, back, forward, back, forward, back. And I was really, really stuck in this turnip field, way off the road. I mean, if you would have seen where my car was and I told you I was turning around, you would have said, what? All right, it's dark. Raining, sleeting. I get out of my car and I'm thinking, all right, the only thing I can do is walk. And I thought, am I closer to his house or mine? Determined I was closer to my house, so I started walking along the road after I got out of the turnip field. So I'm walking along and pretty soon, not very long after I started walking, a car pulled up behind me. Now this is before cell phones, all right? No cell phone. And on and through my mind, I'm going through all the things my mother, of course, told me about never be out at night, you know, as a woman, never be. So all those things are going through my mind. And so I just kept walking, did not turn around. The lights are shining on me, and I did not turn around. Kept on walking. Lo and behold, the door opens, and someone gets out of the car. I don't turn around still. I keep on walking. I hear this voice saying, "Do you need help?" Still, I did not turn around, and I said this, "No, I'm walking home. My home is just around the corner." There was no corner, and there were no homes anywhere nearby. The next thing I heard was absolutely amazing, and I will never, never, ever forget it. This voice said, "Teresa?" And I said, "Jay?" This was a man, a young man that I had been to high school with, barely knew him, never talked to him, never really knew him. He recognized my voice in the dark that night and called out my name. And I got in his car, and he took me home. It was amazing, totally, totally amazing. And it was a good story. I'm glad to have that story, because the next day when my husband and father-in-law went to get the car out of the field with chains. And okay. So, hearing our name spoken is just a fabulously wonderful thing. And I'm going to read two scripture verses, and that's why I loved Brock's song, because it has to do with naming and the beautiful, beautiful things that go along with that. The first one, and you can just listen along with me, because it's not on the back of the devotional. And you'll recognize it as soon as I start, one of my favorite scripture passages. On the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene came to the tomb early while it was still dark. She saw that the stone had been removed from the tomb, so she ran to Simon Peter and to the other disciple, the one Jesus loved, and said to them, "They have taken the Lord out of the tomb, and we don't know where they have put him." At that, Peter and the other disciple went out, heading for the tomb. The two were running together, but the other disciple outran Peter and got to the tomb first. Stooping down, he saw the linen clothes lying there, yet he did not go in. Then, following him, Simon Peter came also. He entered the tomb and saw the linen clothes lying there. The wrapping that had been on his head was not lying with a linen cloth, but was folded up in a separate place by itself. The other disciple, who had reached the tomb first, then entered the tomb, saw, and believed. For they still did not understand the scripture that he must rise from the dead. Then the disciples went home again. But Mary stood outside facing the tomb, crying. As she was crying, she stooped to look into the tomb. She saw two angels in white sitting there, one at the head and one at the feet where Jesus' body had been lying. They said to her, "Woman, why are you crying?" "Because they've taken away my Lord," she told him, "and I don't know where they've put him." Having said this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there, though she did not know it was Jesus. "Woman," Jesus said to her, "why are you crying? Who is it you are looking for?" Supposing he was the gardener, she replied, "Sir, if you've removed him, tell me where you've put him, and I will take him away." And Jesus said, "Mary." Turning around, she said to him in Hebrew, "Rabboni." Revelation 2:17. "Anyone who has an ear should listen to what the Spirit says to the churches. I will give the victor some of the hidden manna. I will also give him a white stone. And on the stone, a new name is inscribed that no one knows except the one who receives it." May God bless that reading of his word.